Emergency management is complicated and it's usually divided into planning, response, and recovery. The planning phase is crucial in order to identify the risks and who is more vulnerable to those risks and develop a plan of action for when disaster strikes to stay safe. Whole conferences have dedicated themselves to thinking about these things. But might it be the local solutions that are inclusive of people with disabilities are what really works? Michelle Villeneuve led the Disability Inclusive Disaster Preparedness in New South Wales project. She will provide key findings and steps to making a disaster management plan that is truly inclusive of people with disability. Please welcome Michelle Villeneuve.
Thank you very much for that introduction, Melissa, and thank you for having me today. I really appreciate it. I'd like to, oh, sorry, I've just lost my video there for a second. I'd like to recognize that I'm actually calling in to you from the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. I'd like to pay my respects to Aboriginal people and elders, past, present, and future emerging leaders as well. Today, I actually have chosen to speak very specifically about person-centered emergency preparedness and a peer leadership program that we've been engaging in Queensland, actually. Before I do so, I really want to put this program of research into a context for everyone. We've been conducting research in partnership with communities for a number of years now. And on the slide, you'll see a timeline on the left, which actually shows visually the trajectory of our research from 2013, when we started this work in Indonesia, all the way through the number of projects that we've been engaged in. I think there's about nine projects on the screen, and that's just a flavor of the work that we've been doing in this space. On the right hand of the slide, you see pictures of people with disability, emergency managers, community service, healthcare providers talking together about what it means to be inclusive of people with disability. That's what DIDRR is all about. It's about making sure the voices, the perspectives, and the needs of people with disability are considered. But it's not only about making sure that they're considered, it's about making sure they're responded to and acted upon. And so this program of research is actually about connecting the different sectors that have a responsibility in keeping people safe, together with developing capacity for us as individuals and the service providers who we work with, to support and help to keep each other safe. And so I wanted to just say that this snapshot of the work we're doing in Queensland is just one illustration of the way that we've been working. And I hope that that will maybe inspire innovation in the different communities in which you work and increase perhaps some motivation to knock on the door of someone from another sector, maybe you haven't reached out or worked with them before, to be able to engage in conversations about disaster risk reduction. The slide here just shows the scope and the scale of the partners with which we work. And I want to reinforce that the exciting thing behind the research that we do is that it doesn't sit at the university. It takes place in the community and it takes place with people. So I hope you'll see through the project I explained today how that actually works. The other thing I wanted to show you before we got started was this framework that we've built. In Queensland, we started the Queen Project focusing in on bringing people with disability and their representatives together with community disability healthcare providers and local disaster managers. So we're talking about the people at council, local councils who develop emergency and disaster management plans and engage with communities to keep their community safe. And we're also talking about emergency service agencies who are on the ground and in the field keeping us safe, particularly when there's an emergency of some kind. And they have an important role in sharing information and making preparedness resources available, but also reminding us what our different risks are. The other thing I wanted to say about this framework is is it takes an all hazards approach. So when we talk about inclusion in disaster risk reduction, we're talking about all hazards. So Anne earlier today talked about the pandemic. Obviously, we understand now that that is probably the single most emergency that we're all at great risk for. But there's other emergencies we're hugely at risk for. House fire, for example, is something we all need to consider. And of course, the last summer has really helped fuel our understanding, no pun intended, of the critical impact that bushfire emergencies can have. Floods, cyclones, East Coast lows, and other challenges to our everyday living can come about because of natural hazards that can provoke an emergency. So the framework we built through that community engagement was to look at what are the roles of the individual stakeholder groups in this process, and how do we come together to share what we each know and do and bring that together to more effective, inclusive disaster risk reduction practices. This framework and the whole toolkit is available on our website, and I'll show you later where you can find that information. What I really want to zero in on today is the role that people with disability can have and how that might work. And the framework identified short-term, medium-term, and long-term outcomes. In the short term, we're looking to increase the capacity of people with disability to self-assess, what's my risk for natural hazards? How prepared am I right now? What are my strengths and what are my support needs? And then use that self-assessment to make a formal emergency preparedness plan that's tailored very specifically, not only to my support needs, but the resources and the people who are likely to be near me when a disaster strikes. And that's usually family, friends, neighbors. And it's not often the emergency services who are the first responders when that initial emergency strikes. So we really need to think about who is in our network. The ultimate long-term goal is that by engaging in this process and making a plan, that people with disabilities their self-reliance and also their planned reliance on others. But going back to that framework I just showed you for a minute, this doesn't sit by itself. This is one part of the larger puzzle and the larger responsibility that we all have to share in this process. Now, we used a couple of tools, the person-centered emergency preparedness tool, which you may be coming familiar with, I hope you are, which breaks emergency preparedness down for people with disability into these eight domains or eight elements. Things like social connectedness, how I manage my health, do I have assistive technology, and how do I manage assistive technology? My personal support and how and where I get support from, assistance animals, how I communicate, and my living situation. So the capability wheel is what we actually call this, and we call it the capability wheel because these are things we all need to consider when we're taking care of our safety. And there are additional things that people with disability need to consider and pre-plan for. We call them capabilities because it's a combination of my strengths, my resources, and my support needs. And we need to put that piece of the puzzle together and make our plans fit to our specific and unique needs. Now, person-centered emergency preparedness happens as a process. Emergency preparedness for all of us really needs to be a process. We can't do it all in one go. And the person-centered tools that we've developed really focus on it being a conversation in four parts: identifying those strengths and support needs, learning about your local hazard risk, and connecting in with your local emergency managers to understand the steps you can take in your community. Planning very specifically how you're going to manage that, given your own unique support needs, and communicating the plan with people in your support network. And that becomes really important because it means there's gaps, lots of people in emergency preparedness, and for people with disability, there may be some significant gaps that may require support. Ultimately, the goal of using person-centered is to prioritize planning based on those functional support needs, optimize self-reliance and plan for what you need for in emergencies, address any gaps in your plan through collaboration. Now, we also used an existing peer support program as part of this project. The Queenslanders with Disability Network operate a leadership program. They provide support to communities across Queensland. And on the map, you will see a group of people with disabilities having a conversation about preparedness. And on the right, you'll see a map and the pinpoint the 25 peer leaders from the Queenslanders with Disability Network who provide peer support across Queensland in the community. And they normally do this through peer support and sometimes through individual support and mentoring in the community. Now, we wanted to combine person-centered emergency preparedness and this peer support program, this model and this very effective program that's already happening in Queensland. And we needed to find a way to knit these two things together and introduce a new skill to the peer leaders in the program. So what we did was we considered transformational leadership as a way to identify what we really want to see these peer leaders doing. We wanted them to act as role models for emergency preparedness and personal planning. We wanted them to have and hold high expectations and inspire optimism about what is possible for people with disability in making their own plan and navigating some of the challenges and the barriers through collaboration in the community. And we needed to make sure people had an acute understanding. We wanted them to have an acute understanding of individual needs. So we didn't want them to just share resources and say, here you go. We wanted them to go a step further and begin to think about what are the support needs of the people in my peer group, of the people that I support, and have and expand on conversations so that they could share information in more effective ways and provide that natural social and emotional support to each other. We also wanted people with disability to use the skill we know they have tenfold, and that is their skills as advocates. And that was really important with the Queenslanders with Disability Peer Support Program, because these peers, these 25 peers we were working with, had already developed incredible capacity as advocates for disability rights in their community. What we now wanted to do was add on emergency preparedness and think about what do those rights mean in the context of emergency preparedness planning, responding during a disaster, and recovering in the long term. And so that's what's created the person-centered emergency preparedness peer leadership program. On this slide, I won't go in great detail, but I wanted to really relay the point that how we work is cyclical and iterative. We work through a number of actions to co-design products and tools. We try them out and we test them. We monitor and evaluate how it's going. We sometimes change things up in the process if they're not working. And if something's going really well, we try to find ways to amplify that. And so that's what this diagram is trying to show. And I'll just tell you a few examples of how that looks in practice. So in practice on this slide, you'll see a number of people. These are our peer leaders, and this is at the first training. And you'll notice that at the front or sitting in the seats are people holding the microphone. Who's holding the microphone? It's our peers with disability. And that's because the training itself was co-designed and it was co-led and delivered by this peer group. So that took a little bit of planning and a little bit of initiative on our part and bringing together not only people with disability with the lived experience of disability, but also finding and resourcing people with disability who were also experts in emergency preparedness and beginning to share information together about how they can operate with their peer groups in the community. The other thing we strategically do in the work we undertake is we make sure we connect people with disability into the local emergency managers. So an example was at this workshop where we were training the peer leaders in person-centered emergency preparedness. We made sure we brought state-level emergency managers and local councils who do disaster resilience work at the local level of the community to share what they know about local hazard risk, and also to connect them into the resources that these peer leaders will need when they go back to their communities and need to connect back in with their local emergency managers and look on the right websites for the right state level information and resources and connect in with the get ready tools and programs that are available to them in the community. This is really important. People with disabilities, as Melissa has talked about already today, have been excluded entirely from the disaster management process. And so part of our method and our madness is to make sure we're bringing emergency managers together with people with disability in dialogue, the dialogue where the rich learning happens, And we're seeing responsiveness on both sides. People with disabilities learn about what is needed to make a plan, what can be realistic, and what is maybe unrealistic and they need to have contingencies for. And at the same time, emergency managers are learning a heck of a lot more about how to make their resources accessible, what people with disabilities can do, and what they need support for through the process. I'd like to just show you a little video to give you a flavor of what that's like from the perspective of one of our peer leaders.
I'm Nadia. I've been a convener for about a year. Before that, I was coming along to the group for about 2 years. So I've become a lot more confident as I've come along. And now I'm able to help as co-convener, which has been a really exciting opportunity for me. When we were asked if we wanted to participate in person-centered emergency preparedness, I thought, that sounds really heavy, but I'll give it a go. And I've come in here today and had the opposite experience. I'm very excited because I see so much strength in my group. And I think each person in my group has very different needs, but also very different strengths. What are some of the things that you might not even be aware of, but areas in which you're already ready for a disaster? What are some of the skills that you already have? Where are you starting at? And what are some ways in which we as a peer support group can help to build you up?
So that is an example both of what our peers are learning as a result of engaging in person-centered emergency preparedness and taking that out to their peer groups. But it's also an example of our products in progress. So what you just saw is a draft clip of what we're building together with our peer leaders that at the end of this project, we hope will show not only their own preparedness planning process that they've gone through, but also the roles that they've taken on as peer leaders in their communities and how that's had an impact with their peers. So I was really pleased to be able to show you a small glimpse of that video. But at the same time, I recognize in seeing a very tiny edit, you're not seeing closed captions or Auslan interpreted, thanks to our Auslan interpreter here today that helped to rush through that. But those final products will have all of those accessibility features once we finish them. Now, Nadia shared with us on that video that the process is overwhelming, messy, and confronting. And that's a message we hear over and over and over again from people with disability when they start engaging in person-centered emergency preparedness. And I don't want to undermine that that is a fact. For many people with disabilities, and the more complex support needs you have, the more overwhelming that process can be. But it's really important to also share the message from our peer leaders that it can be done and it really must be undertaken. And so that speaks quite a lot to transformational leadership, where we need to champion and have role models and give some worked out examples of how that actually looks in practice. We've learned through the process how important it is for people to have a healthy dose of realistic optimism. We are not going to have the perfect plan tomorrow for everyone with disability in all of Australia to manage every disaster. That would not be realistic. But we can start to self-assess where we're at today. I haven't thought about it. Or I've thought about it, but I haven't really taken any actions, honestly. Or I've started to get organized and I've thought about my documents and really important photos and important papers, but I really haven't taken concrete actions I need to take, particularly those that are disability specific. And this is where the training becomes really important. And I suppose differentiates some of the training that might happen in the general community. Most training and capacity development and community engagement around disaster risk reduction is generalized to everybody in the population. This training and this toolkit is specific to the support needs of people with disability. And so when we're looking at progressing people along this continuum, we would like to see that their plans are disability specific, as our peer leaders would say, unique to their support needs and communicated with their support network. It is really important for our peers and the people they support to understand that it can work. And those of you who were following the Disability Royal Commission last week would have seen Ricky Buchanan speak about how her plan worked. And I'm also have been a part of that preparedness planning process and some of the conversations that went into supporting Ricky to move along that trajectory of her own preparedness planning. And the other thing about our project was that COVID-19 put our training absolutely to the test. And one of our co-educators said, I know that COVID's going to be a game changer, but it's the ultimate test of our shelter in place plans. And we need to really use opportunity. So we actually, as part of this messy process of co-designing tools, took time out in March to stop the all hazards toolkit planning and develop a COVID specific planning guide. And we jumped forward with them sharing that throughout their peer support groups and tailoring that plan that's all available throughout all of Australia. The guide is available on the website. And again, I'll show you on the last slide a link that will take you to the resources that you can use and download. The last messages I suppose I want to leave you with is that there's lots of other facilitators in this process, and throughout our learnings, we're honing in on what are the critical key features and the ingredients of a support leadership program. How do we pack them into that program and produce resources that other people can use, and programs, ideally peer leadership programs, that we hope will pop up across Australia by other disability organizations who already have peer leadership programs and are perhaps ready to embrace person-centered emergency preparedness as part of that trajectory of their peer support plans. We know that the plans need to be, and the process needs to be, strengths-based and capability-focused. And what our peer leaders have benefited from most is the stories, the sharing together, the working out some of the challenges that each of them experienced, but perhaps in slightly different ways, and having the worked out understanding of, that's what worked for Tony. I could probably try it if I do these things. And that kind of support is really what motivates and propels people along that can to more prepared. The other thing that's really important is having results that break it down. So the person-centered framework that I showed you at the beginning that breaks it down into 8 elements is one thing. Another thing is the workbook that we've just produced with these peer leaders, also available on our website, which breaks it down in 4 conversations. And we've been intentional by saying this is not necessarily a written document you fill out, although there's lots of room for written self-reflect in the workbook, but it's primarily and fundamentally a conversation guide. And we advocate that people have emergency preparedness conversations in conversation with other people. And I guess the last thing I wanted to say is how critical it is for people with disabilities to have a leadership role in the space, and the critical importance that's been, I know from our research team's perspective, in having champions on the ground who really truly understand the lived experience of disability and can really get behind emergency preparedness and adding that to their repertoire from an advocacy perspective and sharing that throughout the community. The exciting part when we think about links between what they're doing and the other areas or stakeholders involved in this process is that we're getting that dialogue. We're getting that dialogue with local councils. We're getting fireworks happening among service providers saying, oh, we could share these resources through the disability support organization I work for. And so, and I think that's how we're going to begin to see preparedness grow and safety and resilience improve. I'm just sharing the website where you can go and download these resources and have a look at our other projects and look in a bit more detail at some of the other things we've been doing in New South Wales, where some of this work was initiated, and some of the things that are up and coming in programs and communities. And I do want to draw your attention to, on our person-centered project page, to resources we've recently developed for people from culturally and linguistically diverse communities. We've tried our best to all video-based resources and user-friendly guidebooks that help people instead of academic papers and thick resources that you need to wade through. So we hope you'll enjoy looking at those resources. And I just want to finally acknowledge the support from our funders. In the project I talked about today, it's currently funded by the Queensland Government through the Queensland Disaster Resilience Fund and the Department of Communities, Disability Services and Seniors. It's led by the University of Sydney, my team of researchers, but can only happen in partnership, which happens with the Queenslanders with Disability Network and the Community Services Industry Alliance. And I do want to acknowledge the work that went on before that. I was leading a project called Prepare in New South Wales, which produced these person-centered tools, and the Joint State and Commonwealth Natural Disaster Resilience Program funded them. Whole large cohort of multiple stakeholders from New South Wales have been a long part of this journey toward improving preparedness. And of course, I want to thank the Queenslanders with Disability Leaders themselves and staff who are supporting the project right now. So I'll leave it there.
Thank you very much, Michelle. That was really, really insightful, and it's very clear that this project has thought of all the things that people need to think about in terms of any type of disaster that comes across in their lives. It's really important to be prepared. Now, because we're running out of time, we have some questions. So I would like to jump straight into the question. Can I have the first question, please? Okay. Connecting up different stakeholders takes time, persistence, and energy. How do we get all the parts motivated? Experience of many people with disability is not to be listened to or have our needs considered. How do we get planners interested?
Mm-hmm. I think my gut response to this question, although if I reflect on it for the next 24 hours, I might have more ideas. But I think my gut reaction is, from a community development perspective, mobilize. And how do people with disability mobilize best? Through their disability organizations. And the support that they receive, because when we mobilize together as a group, our voices are amplified through an organization. And I think part of the reason I wanted to share the particular example of working with the Queenslanders with Disability Network is because they've got a particular skill, I think. They've got a skill at amplifying strategies, issues, and ideas upward toward policy decision-making and advocating on that level, but they also have a deep connection to their members and what their members' needs are across all of Queensland. And I think a unique combination of those skills within a disability organization. Now, the next logical question might be the other issues surrounding that, continuing the funding and keeping those supports going for organizations. But I really think that it is that kind of persistence and that energy. And I do, the one thing I will add to that is the strength of our partnership. So our community organizations bring that nose to the ground, that everyday reality of living in their local communities and what needs to happen. And our academic team brings principles of evaluation and methodological approaches that help to systematically gather and share those resources and information and develop the tools. So I think it's a lovely marriage of the two skill sets where we can work together to make sure that that we can make resources and actions available to everyone.
I suppose the disasters of 2020 have brought this to the forefront of everyone's mind now. Anyway, considering how unprepared we were all were for this. Can I have the last question, please? Should disaster planning be included in NDIS plans? It's always going to be an NDIS question.
There's the million-dollar question. Should it be included in an NDIS plan? Or should people have the flexibility in their NDIS plan if they need support to make a plan? I answer that question with caution, only because not everyone has an NDIS plan, not everyone is eligible for the NDIS, not everyone receives NDIS services. So I think, yes, planning should be part of everyday planning because it's a part of our mainstream inclusion into all of society. And people with disability have the rights, just like any other citizen, to access mainstream emergency management information and resources and tailor them to their unique support needs. And that's essentially the role of support programs like the NDIS. But I answer it with caution because that would leave a lot of people out. And it really means that we need to think about this in the healthcare system, in the aged care system. We need to think about people who aren't on any of those programs. And so our approach to disaster planning in a multi-pronged way throughout communities is to make sure it's coming from every possible angle. And so I would suggest that one of the things that has been a really real strength of our partnerships, and we're beginning to see it flourish at this point, is our partnerships with local councils. Local councils have a roles and incredible opportunities to connect in not only with those NDIS providers, but people working in homelessness and people who are dealing with other social issues that people are experiencing. And collectively, they can harness a lot of opportunity to communicate about these resources and get the messages out to their community. So yes, I agree. And I think it also needs to come in a multi-pronged way from a number of different sources.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you very much, Michelle. I really appreciate you taking your time out of your busy day to come and speak with us all today. It's really, really much appreciated. And thank you for all the work you have done.
It's an absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Okay, everybody, we're about to head off to another stretch break that you can dance in your spaces again. And just a word that if you would like to ask questions, please put it in the Q&A box in Zoom, not in the chat box, so that I can make sure that your question is answered live. So enjoy your stretch break. See you in a few minutes.